Three ways that a physician can be involved in the death of a patient are termination of life support, physician-assisted suicide, and euthanasia. Each one of these entails more direct involvement by a physician in the patient's death. In the last episode, we discussed the termination of life support. In this episode, we're going to examine physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. Some of you may be old enough to remember the case of Brittany Maynard. Her situation drew national attention in the United States back in 2014. She was a young and vivacious and newly married 29-year-old. Then she was diagnosed with a brain tumor. She underwent two surgeries to try to remove the tumor, but they failed. And when the cancer came back even more aggressively, she was only given 6 months to live. She wanted to live, but she was terminally ill, so she wanted to end her life on her own terms. She moved to Oregon, a state that allows assisted suicide. She got the prescribed medicine and then hung on to it for a few weeks until she felt like she couldn't handle the symptoms anymore. And then she took her own life. Here's a brief review of her situation.
A year after getting married, Brittany Maynard began suffering from severe headaches. And at just 29 years old, a doctor gave her devastating news. She had stage 4 terminal brain cancer. The prognosis kept getting worse.
I went from having a few years to 6 months. This cancer was going to kill me, and the way it was going to kill me was terrible.
She decided she wanted to live the rest of her life on her own terms. So Brittany and her husband Dan moved from California to Oregon, which at the time was one of just 4 states where terminally ill patients could legally get drugs to end their own lives. She chronicled her journey in videos watched by millions.
I can't even tell you the amount of relief that it provides me to know that I don't have to die the way that it's been described to me that my brain tumor would take me on its own.
Brittany became a fierce advocate for death with dignity laws.
I will die upstairs in my bedroom that I share with my husband.
On November 1st, 2014, Brittany wrote on Facebook that she knew it was time to go. Surrounded by loved ones, she took the medication that ended her life.
It truly was the most peaceful experience that you could ever hope for when you talk about a person's passing.
Since her death, Dan has tried to fulfill his wife's legacy, fighting to pass right-to-die laws in 3 more states and in Washington, D.C.
Brittany Maynard's situation illustrates the understandable fears that many people have that they will be like a hostage to medical technology. It may alleviate the pain, but it may also prolong a painful situation if it can't resolve it. Brittany's husband became an advocate for right-to-die laws, what some people refer to as death with dignity. According to the Death with Dignity website, as of 2025, there are 12 states where physician-assisted suicide is legal and 17 states where it's being considered. There is vigorous debate about the morality of assisted suicide. Unlike the termination of life support, which we examined in the previous episode, in physician-assisted suicide, a physician is more actively involved as a causal agent. Advocates of this approach prefer a term like physician aid in dying rather than physician-assisted suicide because of the stigma associated with the word suicide. But physician-assisted suicide is really what it is. In this situation, a physician provides the medical means for a patient to take his or her own life. This is typically done by a patient self-administering a lethal dose of medication provided by the physician. The physician provides the medication and instructs the patient on how much medication to ingest. If the patient follows the directions and takes the medication, death occurs usually within a few minutes. This is distinctly different than the termination of life support, which allows nature to take its course, and the death is still ultimately caused by the underlying disease or health condition. In physician-assisted suicide, death is caused by the medication and not by the underlying disease or health condition. Legal cases that marked the first time the U.S. Supreme Court addressed physician-assisted suicide were Washington v. Glucksberg and Vacco v. Quill. In 1997, Harold Glucksberg, a doctor who practiced medicine in Washington, challenged the state law that made assisted suicide a criminal act. Glucksberg argued that the liberty interest protected by the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment included a fundamental right to assisted suicide. Glucksberg described the liberty interest more broadly as a right to die. The district court agreed with Glucksberg and held the state statute unconstitutional. On appeal, the Ninth Circuit affirmed. Another case in 1997 was Vacco v. Quill. The state of New York prohibited assisted suicide for everyone, but allowed competent patients to refuse life-saving medical treatment. Dr. Timothy Quill wanted to be able to prescribe lethal medications at the request of his terminally ill patients. He, along with other doctors and some of their terminally ill patients, sued New York Attorney General Dennis Vacco in federal court. Quill argued that New York allowed a patient to refuse medical treatment, so its prohibition against assisted suicide violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. The district court rejected the plaintiff's claims, but the Court of Appeals reversed, holding that if patients are permitted to reject life-saving treatment, then a ban on assisted suicide constitutes an equal protection violation. The Supreme Court concurrently reviewed these two cases that challenged the state laws prohibiting physician-assisted suicide. In both cases, the lower courts had ruled that there was a constitutionally protected right to die. The courts argued that there is a legally and morally relevant distinction between assisting suicide and withdrawing life-sustaining treatments. Patients have the right to say no to life-sustaining treatments because they have the right of bodily integrity, meaning the right to determine what is done to their own bodies. Medical treatment administered against the will of the patient is generally considered battery, and patients have the right to protect themselves against it. The Supreme Court argued that assistance in suicide is grounded neither in a broader right to die, which is absent from the Constitution, nor in American legal tradition. However, the Supreme Court did not say that assisted suicide was illegal. It simply ruled that states are not violating anyone's rights if they prohibit assisted suicide, since there is no constitutionally protected right to die. But if states desire laws allowing for assisted suicide, they can do so. Basically, legally, the decision is left in the hands of the states. The Bible doesn't give a systematic teaching on suicide. It doesn't address it directly like topics such as murder, adultery, or theft. But there are examples in the Bible that present us with principles. The Bible records several suicides without explicitly giving any kind of moral commentary. For example, Saul fell on his sword to avoid capture, and Saul's armor-bearer did the same. Ahithophel hanged himself after betraying David and his counsel was rejected. Zimri burned down his house around himself after military defeat. And Judas hanged himself after betraying Jesus. While the Bible does not give any explicit commentary against these actions or in favor of them, in all these cases, the act is presented as tragic, often linked to despair, guilt, or defeat. None of these stories present suicide as noble or righteous. And there are people in the Bible who suffered financially, emotionally, and physically, such as Job, who were angry at God, such as Jonah, and who saw life as meaningless, such as Solomon. But they didn't commit suicide. The Bible never presents suicide as an option for those situations that seem hopeless. In the Bible, life is presented as God's gift. Life is repeatedly described as belonging to God, and humanity is created in God's image. This suggests that ending one's own life violates God's sovereignty over life and death. The command, "You shall not murder," is understood traditionally to prohibit taking innocent human life, including one's own. Suicide is often interpreted as self-murder, and a feeling of hopelessness or despair is not justification for suicide. Even figures who despaired, like Elijah and Job, did not take their lives, and God provided restoration and hope. Plus, we know that the timing and manner of a person's death ultimately belong to God. Most Christian interpretations see suicide as contrary to God's will because it rejects His lordship over life. Besides physician-assisted suicide, another key issue is euthanasia. It refers to the direct and intentional efforts of a physician or other medical professional to help a dying patient to die. So the action that involves the least amount of physician involvement is the termination of life support. The doctor doesn't have to do anything but let nature take its course. In physician-assisted suicide, the doctor provides the medication for a patient to commit suicide, so the doctor is a little more directly involved. In the third situation of euthanasia, a physician actually administers a lethal injection of drugs into the patient. The patient is killed by the direct action of the physician. Some of you may remember the name Jack Kevorkian. He was sometimes referred to as Dr. Death. Kevorkian had been defying state laws by engaging in assisted suicide. He claimed to have helped more than 130 people die, often using machines he invented like the Thanatron, which delivered lethal doses of narcotics, and the Mercitron, which delivered carbon monoxide. He would instruct patients how to use them to commit suicide. So even though the patients took their own lives, Dr. Kevorkian was still involved as a causal agent by providing the means for these people to take their own lives. But the death of Thomas Uecke was different. Uecke was a Michigan man suffering from ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Kevorkian did not assist Uecke in committing suicide himself. Rather, Kevorkian injected Uecke with lethal chemicals. He had received Uecke's informed consent, but Kevorkian had done all the work, and the Michigan court considered it murder. Kevorkian was convicted of second-degree murder for performing euthanasia. Although Kevorkian was often ridiculed as Dr. Death, I think he probably was sincere in believing that he was doing the right thing. He believed people should have the right to die when they want. The American Medical Association acknowledges that there are physicians on both sides of the issue who share a commitment to values of care, compassion, respect, and dignity, but they diverge in drawing different moral conclusions. Some argue that physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia are inconsistent with the Hippocratic Oath and the physician's role as a healer, but others argue that it's more merciful. From the context of a Christian worldview, the Bible seems clear that determining the end of life is a prerogative that belongs to God alone. This is the basis for the long-standing prohibition of suicide and laws against murder. But advocates of physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia argue that terminal illness should constitute an exception to these prohibitions, and these procedures should be allowed out of compassion for the dying and respect for their autonomy. Somewhat surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, there is actually a growing trend even among religious believers that physician-assisted suicide should be accepted. In the next episode, we'll be continuing our examination of arguments on both sides of these issues, so please be sure to tune in. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic, and until next time, take care and God bless.